My guest today is Dr. Eddie von Mueller. He is a film scholar and senior lecturer in the Department of Film and Media Studies at Emory University. He's also the curator of a new series which debuts tomorrow, presented by Emory Cinematheque. Eddie, welcome back to City Lights.
Thanks so much, Lois, for having me.
It's so great that Emory provides this for the community. And tell us about Drawn to Film. What drew you to create this series?
Well, this is a little bit of a dream come true for me because from my very early childhood, I was a big fan of the comics, the Sunday Funnies and comic books. And of course, I love films. And to have an opportunity to explore these two passions together is a really terrific one for me. But I was also sort of driven to do this at this particular time because comic book movies especially and comic book content is so prominent a part of the current media landscape.
Why are print cartoons and movies twin media?
Well, they kind of are born at the same moment. In fact, in the United States, they're born literally at the same moment. The very first sort of comic strip that appears in the United States appears in 1892, which is the year that Thomas Edison debuts the first movie watching machine. So these are literally two art forms that grow up largely in American cities as part of a new kind of culture, a mass media culture.
Yeah, there are other sociological aspects at work here. Would you talk about those?
Well, you know, one of the things that we see with both comics and movies is they are immensely popular and they cause people immense anxiety. We have people who are concerned that kids who read comics or read funnies aren't learning to read books. We have concerns that these media create negative influences for young people. Exactly the same concerns grow up around the movies. We even have people worried that looking at comics hurts kids' eyes, just the way we were all told when we were kids, right, that watching television was gonna, you know, we're gonna hurt our eyes. So these are part of this new culture, which we greet with both enthusiasm and anxiety.
Do you think that perception still exists?
I do, to some extent. While we will now routinely talk about film as an art, there are certainly lots of kinds of films that we wouldn't think of as art. I'm not sure that a lot of serious film aficionados would be running out to see Guardians of the Galaxy or Suicide Squad because they are still linked with some older ideas about what comics are and what they represent.
Well, let's look at some of the films you've selected for this series, which begins tomorrow with Batman. We have a clip from that.
Don't kill me! Don't kill me, man! Don't kill me! Don't kill me, man!
I'm not going to kill you. I want you to do me a favor. I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
Okay, I think there's a lot about Batman that could qualify it as an art film.
I think so, too. I think that it's fun to hear the debut of the Bat voice. Apparently, when you put on a costume, your voice gets lowered. But Burton's film in 1989... This is Tim Burton in 1989 with Batman. This kind of ushers in a new era in superhero and comic book films, and it is a film where you can watch the struggle between trying to make a serious piece of cinema out of something that's associated with camp and cartooniness and mass culture, and you really see that tension play out in that film, in the performances, in the production design, which is beautiful. The production design of the film is beautiful. And it is a huge hit. It's a blockbuster. It makes over $450 million. And this is sort of ringing the dinner bell for Hollywood to begin to take this kind of content a lot more seriously. It's also the first comic book movie to be made after the sort of revolution in comics that happens in the mid-1980s.
Would you talk about that?
Well, for a lot of years, at least from the throughout the 1960s and 1970s, comic books were principally going to be associated with superhero comics. There's still some Western and war titles around, and superheroes were not being taken particularly seriously. There are, for the fanboys who might be listening, yes, there were some exceptions. There were great comics in the 70s. But in the 1980s, we're going to see a couple of writers and illustrators really taking a new look at this medium. And two in particular influence Batman. One is Frank Miller, who in 1986 releases a Batman book called The Dark Knight, which continues to be influential, and Frank Miller has become a major presence in superhero cinema. And a writer named Alan Moore, who wrote a book called The Killing Joke about the Joker. And both of these come out before and during the production of Batman. And it's part of a major reevaluation of this entire medium. The art is going to start to look different. The stories are going to start to look different. And we're going to see a lot of younger people, at the time younger people, coming in and doing books outside of the mainstream, the so-called independent comics movement.
And the film, it looks like, that would embody what you're talking about is that which screens on October 26th, the History of Violence.
Well, the History of Violence is part of that. I think what really captures the spirit of the independent comics movement best in our series is Ghost World, based on the comics of a guy named Dan Close, who is working in the mid-1980s. And it is ironic, and it's sharp, and it is looking at the kind of pop culture that has grown out of you know, the mid-20th century obsessions. I think we have a clip of that.
You are like the luckiest guy in the world. I would kill to have stuff like this.
Please, go ahead and kill me.
Oh, come on. What are you talking about?
Well, you think it's healthy to obsessively collect things? You can't connect with other people, so you fill your life with stuff. I'm just like all the rest of these pathetic collector losers.
No, you're not. You're a cool guy, Seymour.
I'm so cool. How come I haven't had a girlfriend in like 4 years? I can't even remember the last time a girl talked to me.
I'm talking to you. You know, I bet there are tons of women who'd go out with you in a minute. I know I could get you a date in like 2 seconds.
Good luck.
I mean it. You leave everything to me, I'm going to be your own personal dating service.
Yeah, well, we should get back.
That, of course, was from Ghost World 2001. You have a wide range of examples, I mean a wide range of decades that you cover, going back to 1954.
Yeah.
Prince Valiant.
We see comic book movies being made almost from the dawn of cinema, from 1904 onward. If something's successful in the newspapers or successful on newsstands as a comic book, that's something that the film industry is going to be very interested in. And even though the comics, especially in newspapers, have really dwindled in importance, at the height of newspaper comics, some of these cartoons and comic strips would have readerships in the hundreds of millions. Mm. And that's significant. And so we see lots of filmmakers and many luminous and important filmmakers are engaged with this stuff. So we do go back to Prince Valiant, which is a strip that started in the 1930s and is still running today, not under the hand, of course, of its original creator. And these are properties that retain a lot of brand value. Of course, the film industry is very interested in protecting the huge investment. Even making a film like Prince Valiant in 1954, it's a lot of costumes, it's a lot of sets, it's a lot of money. So basing it on a property that already has a built-in audience is good business sense.
It's safe, mm-hmm. and Hollywood loves safe, even if it means billions of dollars that they have to put up.
Right.
You have an interesting choice from the 1960s.
Barbarella.
Talk about that.
Well, Barbarella is comic books and print cartoons are not an exclusively American phenomenon. And Europe and Asia, especially Japan, both have very important contributions to the medium. And in the 1960s, grown-up comic books, which means sex and violence... grown-up comic books were very popular in Europe, including the original material for Barbarella. It is a film that really reflects how hard it was to do comic book fantasy-style movie making before we had digital animation and contemporary visual effects. So it's got this crazy pop art sensibility, and of course Jane Fonda in a blonde wig. It's directed by Roger Vadim, who is a figure that's sort of embodies both the exploitation side of cinema and the art side of cinema.
And he was her husband.
This was sort of a thing with him. Previously, he had married Brigitte Bardot, whose career he'd also launched. So
wasn't Catherine Deneuve in there?
Yes,
too?
Catherine Deneuve. The guy had a good track record.
Yeah, I would say
that. But I think it really captures the psychedelic potential of cartoons, which we see in other '60s films. There's an adaptation of the newspaper strip Modesty Blaze, and the Beatles will do Yellow Submarine in a very pop art style. So. There is a link between psychedelic culture and cartoon culture.
And Barbarella says it all.
It does.
I think one of the best films in this series that you have debuting tomorrow, at least a personal favorite of mine, is Dick Tracy from 1990. It was so wonderfully tongue-in-cheek.
I have to say, there are a couple films on this list that I'm excited to show. Because I think that cartoon movies have occasionally really pushed cinema in some fascinating aesthetic directions. And Dick Tracy is a stunningly beautiful film to watch. It's shot by a famous cinematographer, Vittorio Storaro, and the color palette of the film is the color palette of newspaper comics. They restricted themselves to these really bright colors. It's also fun because Warren Beatty got all of his buddies to be in this movie. So you have, in small roles, you've got Dustin Hoffman, and the lead is going to be played by Al Pacino.
We're going to have, we can hear the rant scene.
I think we have to, this is the anti-Godfather, Al Pacino.
Let's hear it.
All right, that's enough. I want him dead, both of them. I want this no-face dead, and I want Tracy dead. What's the matter? You bums forgot how to kill people? Doesn't your work mean anything to you anymore? Have you no sense of pride in what you do? No sense of duty? No sense of destiny? I'm looking for generals! What do I got? Foot soldiers! I want Dick Tracy dead!
It's too very bad. Subtle.
I was going to say, too bad he's so self-restrained.
No, but this is bringing cartoonishness to performance. And Chester Gould's Dick Tracy was all about the grotesque and these very caricatured villains. And I think it's kind of wonderful the way Pacino caricatures himself for his performance.
Oh, I also think there's one of the great scenes with Madonna and Warren Beatty when he says, aren't you supposed to be mourning? And she says, I'm wearing black underwear. At least I remembered that.
Yeah, it's in there.
Tomorrow is when the film series begins Emory Cinematheque, and it runs through November 30th with the Peanuts movie. Now, that was released just last year. Obviously, you are among those who thinks it was worthwhile.
I thought it was a really wonderful film, much better than than we might have expected it to be. I think also ending with that film really captures the scope and the enduring nature of the relationship between print cartoons and movies. And certainly Peanuts probably is the most beloved, certainly one of the most beloved comic strips of all time. And it seemed wrong to leave it out. It's our only animated film, but it seems wrong not to close with Snoopy.